Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts.
Welcome to Let's Get To, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
And now we are back on Let's Get To for the wrap up the World Series. The last game is played, the last out has been made, and as many people who are depressive like me know, that means the void of no baseball is upon us. But help us to kind of wrap up the season is the director of marketing for the Midland Rockhounds, Matt Berry. Matt, how did the Nationals do it? How did they become the biggest underdog in 29 years to win?
Man, I don't know. When we first started talking about this, I didn't think they were going to win more than one game. So it's one of those things where I'm shocked at it. Honestly, they're a great team. Obviously, they made it to the World Series and played their series the right way. Pitched well when they needed it, hit when they needed it. And, when they got two guys that are going to collectively have more than their entire salary cap on their team right now for next year, it's wild.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about the home run that Will Harris gave up, and which ended up putting the head to Hendricks, who of course had the grand slam against the Dodgers. So that guy's a real high moment player. But that pitch was perfect. It was down and away, corner of the zone, hit a foul pole. I mean, it just kind of shows you sometimes when it's going right, it's going right.
Yeah, and when it rains, it pours. They started throwing a couple more runs on towards the end of the game there. That one base hit the center. Mariznick kind of booted it a little bit. I don't know if it really affected anything. They already had the lead at that point. But, it kind of reminded me of the seventh inning in game two, where they started kicking the ball around a little bit and getting flustered and, at the wrong time for them, right time for the Nats. So.
Yeah. So you've been in both sides of this, with the Rockhounds. You've won a championship and then you've gotten really close. What's it going to be like in the winner's locker room? I mean, what is that feeling like?
So that is one of the coolest experiences that I can say I've ever done. And I think that anybody else can ever be a part of is being in a locker room of a championship winning team immediately after the game. So, from our point of view, when we actually won four straight. So, we kind of got sick of it at some point. So everybody in the Texas League is going to hate me for saying that.
I'd love anyway, that problem as an Astros fan.
Yeah, it's a really good problem to have, but as a staff, we're watching how the game's progressing and then trying to figure out, what we need to do because we have to line the whole clubhouse with plastic and, make sure we have everything ready. We have to move furniture, make sure, we're not covered. We're not getting the fire suppression system isn't going to be all hit with champagne and things like that. And so it's a cool experience. And then being in there, celebrating after a championship is just something you have to be a part of to understand the full experience.
All right. So what about in the other side then? Like, how does it go with, if you drop the game and then that team, I know that it in the, when you win as well, but it's obviously different, but you that team necessarily isn't going to be back together that next year. So how does that whole thing go?
Yeah. So with us, obviously it's a little bit different from how the Nationals and Astros may look for next season. For us, everything relies through Oakland. But in our championship years, all those guys are now playing and starting for Oakland. So, it's good to see them cause day-to-day operation with the players themselves is minimal in most instances, but you get to know them over time, especially guys that have been here for a couple of years. And then when you get to see them, either get traded and finally get their opportunity at the major league level or, the guys that move up within the Oakland organization, it's really good to see. So for these guys, obviously, they want to stay together. They're teammates. They just won the World Series, but that there's a couple of these guys that are not going to be on the Nationals next year and most likely Astros too.
Yeah, it's just such a weird, painful sport. And I was thinking about it in the ALCS, you know, just when Altuve hit the home run to put the Astros in it, and just watching the Yankees just sort of walk off the field. Like, you go from this thing, and I think it's why baseball is so much different and so much more cruel, quite frankly, than any of the other major sports, because you do this starting in February, and then all of a sudden, 6 or 7 months later, 8 months later, it's over.
It's over. And, you know, it's funny. I had a feeling, you know, after that last pitch last night, watching that game, even just, you know, my season's been over since early September. But I had that feeling last night of baseball's finally over.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and when I say finally over, not like that it's a good thing, but it's just like that moment hit, like, this season is over now. And although it's been over for us here at our in Midland, you know, we're already working towards next season. It was just that overarching feeling of, this is over. It's, you know, there's no more baseball until we kick it back off next year.
Yeah, and I think it again is what I love about the game, but what I think is the most interesting part of it is, you know, everything. So I'm not a basketball. I'm not your basketball fan. I am not the guy. Like, I've maybe watched 8 games my entire life, but with football, football's very like event. Okay, every Saturday we're going to do this thing. No matter what happens, starting in March until now, there is a baseball game on. If you need to disconnect from the world, you can find something to watch or listen to. And so it goes from all of it to zero of it. And I think it makes a much bigger gap. It's why we call it the void.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And then obviously working in it, it's, you know, it's tough to think about being in baseball right now, because now baseball's over. In everybody else's mind, baseball just ended last night.
Right.
You know, they'll talk about it for a few days. And then, you know, these next 3 days or 2-3 days when, you know, Steven Strasburg's probably going to opt out of his contract and go on the free agent market. And Rendon, you know, he's got that big deal that was offered to him. And so, you know, there's these guys that are going to be kind of talked about throughout the sports news. But outside of that, baseball's over for a lot of people. So then that's where, you know, me personally, our job is to keep that on people's minds and get ready for next season. So that void is where we do all of our back end work.
Yeah, that's a great point and really interesting. And you probably have to find a walk of line of reminding people it's still there by also still giving people a little bit of a second to kind of breathe before it kicks back off full strength.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, any kind of college football game I go to on the weekends and things like that, tailgates, you know, I personally go to those locally, and you know, that's where I can talk about this type of thing with people. And so I'm at a football game trying to keep baseball in people's minds. Sometimes it's tough.
Yeah. So back to the World Series though, it was a weird series, I feel like, because none of the games actually felt exciting or had any real defining moments. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, the couple games were blowouts in my mind, obviously by the score in game two of 12-3, and then game 4 and 5 for the Astros were just dominant. And then, you know, you go to game 6, nothing really happened. It just seemed like they kind of strung together some runs when they needed to. And then last night, you know, there was really nothing that those 2 home runs in that inning, Will Harris came in and you know, people are kind of ragging on him and more on Hinch making a bad call. So, you know, that's a topic of discussion today and last night. But yeah, you're right. This has been a very vanilla series in my mind. Nothing's been too crazy. Game 1 kind of started with that 5-4, a closer game. But outside of that, it's one team has been, you know, holding on to the power in these games one way or the other for majority of the game. So it's been one of those things where it's like, okay, well, you know, last night once they scored 4 and then put 2 more on, you're like, you know, Houston's got to do this in the bottom of the 9th. That'd be crazy if they did, but that would have been the moment, and there wasn't a moment.
Yeah. You know, the criticism
was like that every game.
The criticism of Hinch is so unfounded. I think, for one, anybody that had seen Greinke since he came over to the Astros realized that he was really capable of kind of getting base hitted to death pretty quickly. And it wasn't the home run that got him pulled. It was the walk right after. And I think, you know, and the big thing down here in Texas in Houston is, you know, why didn't you throw Cole? So throw a guy who's never pitched relief on short rest versus the guy that has given up almost no runs all through postseason. Like it's, I think the questioning of the manager sometimes is such low hanging fruit that it's sort of exhausting to hear.
Yeah, and that's the thing is when you look at the sports, the coach is always the first person to get blamed. It's not the players. And then, you know, you look at umpires or referees and then you might go into the players and then they'll single one person out. You know, it's never a team performance, when you look at it that way. And people are so critical on everything these guys do. You know, they're still human. Juan Soto's 21 years old, just turned 21 years old. He's still a kid. So when you look at it, you know, people that are just hiding behind their keyboards and they want to say what they want to say, which they have the freedom to. And that's what's so great about Twitter and things like that and social media. But, you know, they really lay into these guys. And at the end of the day, yeah, they're making a ton of money to do this job, but it's their job. So, you know, I always think of it like if somebody came in and was standing in my doorway and just doing the same thing to me about my performance in the office, you know how wild right. that would be if somebody was doing that to you at your job, you know? So that's what it is. And you know, you can't look at they had the best record in Major League Baseball this year still, correct? The Astros did.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's, we talked about the, if the Nats didn't win, would it still be a successful season? And, you know, on the last time I was on, I think I said that Astros losing will be more of a failure than if the Nats lost, but really when you look at it, both teams were there. You know, they were the best two teams in the league this year. They fought it out. You know, nobody could win at home, which is crazy that happened. But that's how the cards fell. And that's, you know, there's nothing you can do about it now. And you make the decisions that you make and you got to live with them. And I think being so critical on coaches is in managers and such is just, it's ridiculous.
One of the things I think, because the games themselves individually haven't been so compelling, has been the media trying to really manufacture storylines, saying, you know, creating a narrative of, well, because there was a problem in the Astros behind, you know, front office culture, they therefore deserve to lose. Or the latest thing was Bregman and Soto carrying the bat to first. You know, I know you're a longtime baseball guy. Does that bug you, or is it much to do about nothing?
Well, see, nobody made a big deal out of when Bartolo Colon hit his home run and carried the bat to first a couple of years ago. So, you know, when it's these younger guys on the big stage, that's when they want to make a big deal of it. And like we were just talking about, there was no major moments really in the series. So they didn't have the organic headlines to talk about. So they had to force something to create some drama about the series. And instead of talking about the actual play, they try to focus on these things that the players are doing, and which sometimes it's in a good light with the celebrations, how the Nationals are, you know, they're dancing in the dugout after home runs and things like that. But yeah, they always try to find the really fun and youthful things that these guys are still doing, and they try to make a big deal out of it because it's not, you know, and I'm using air quotes, traditional baseball and things like that.
So, right.
When they don't have anything to write about the drama in the actual series, because it was so kind of, you know, it was plain and, you know, wasn't exciting really in the grand scheme of things, that's what they have to do.
Yeah. It's like, you can't push, Major League Baseball can't push the whole "let the kids play" slogan and then get mad when they play like kids.
Exactly. Yeah, they want everybody to have fun. It's supposed to be a fun game, and it's tough when games are 4 hours long every night. But and that's something they're going to have to consider. But also they're pushing that all season long to having this fun atmosphere and how baseball brings everybody together, and it's so much fun. But then you know you get mad when these guys are actually having fun. It's you know.
Yeah, and to take that a step further, too, when Soto did it, they tried to make it sound like he was showing up the Astros or whatever. And then in his interviews, like, no, I thought it looked cool. And so I thought I would do it, too. Like, I don't think baseball's not football. So trying to sort of posit it as these really like man on man struggles that way, it just doesn't fit. It feels like it feels very round hole square peg for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the stigma with the unwritten rules of baseball and people getting beamed after they bat flip or, you know, stare at the ball too long, don't get out of the box quick enough. You know, you have those pitchers out there that take offense to that, but not everybody does. They know it's part of the game. It's part of the whole entertainment factor of what they do. So, and look how much that has changed over the last couple of years of how everybody does some kind of bat flip or, you know, Sammy Sosa used to do the little hop out of the box, and Jose Bautista was the one that I think is the most notable bat flipper that started everything. And you look at how these guys have just done it for years, and now everybody's doing it. Now it's becoming, you know, too much of a thing.
Right. Well, Matt, any final thoughts then on the World Series? I know we're going to talk to you in a couple of weeks after the winter meetings for our finale, but anything, any final thoughts on the season?
Well, I enjoyed it. It was good coming on here and talking about it. I like doing that, kind of recapping the couple games throughout the series. And, you know, I was wrong 3 times. You liked that tweet. I tweeted that out last night.
Yeah.
You liked that tweet immediately as I tweeted it. And I knew you were going to be on Twitter, so I figured you'd see it. I was wrong about 5 games. I was wrong about 6 games. And I was wrong about winning at home. So I will take that. I will hand up. I was wrong. Did not see it going the way it was. And, you know, congratulations to the Washington Nationals.
Well, Matt, thanks again so much for being part of our show. And like I said, we're going to talk to you in a few weeks. And until then, you know, enjoy your Halloween and enjoy starting to deal with your portion of the void.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You too. Good luck through that. And we'll talk soon.
Go, go Astros, a focus on H-Town hardball.
And we are ready for Go, go Astros. Andy Tomcheson is with us as always. Andy, not the ending that we thought.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, having had a couple of days to reflect on it, it's a tough pill to swallow, but maybe not quite as tough as it would have been had the Astros not won the title in 2017.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I try to stay away from – we've been digesting this for a couple of days, and I think I immediately got to a pretty better place after it was over. I didn't want to get too much into – second guessing the manager and what should AJ Hinch have done, because I think that's low hanging fruit. I think that anything that could have happened when you score 2 runs, anything could have happened, most of them bad. But I do agree. I think for as much as you and I have been fans of this team for all of our lives, it is better because 2017 happened. And I think, you know, why don't you tell people what we had hoped for as far as our competitive edge going forward after 2017, not necessarily coming into the season, but just in general.
A young core, dominant starting pitching, the secret sauce that everybody thinks the Astros have when it comes to developing and reclaiming starting pitching. I think those were the things that led you to believe that Houston was on the verge of a dynastic style of team. And the reality is there's a couple different ways to look at that. I would consider the Braves of the 90s a dynasty, even though they only won 1 title. I would consider the Astros still well on their way to that, considering that they've won, 325 games over the last 3 years, been to 3 straight ALCSs and won 2 pennants and won 1 world championship. The Astro fans have nothing to hang their head about, and Astros Nation has nothing to hang its head about.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we had talked before about how because of the team coming from where it came from when we were you know, growing up and then in high school, maybe it's a sort of low, it's sort of defeatist to say that I'm just glad that it looks like we're going to be competitive for a long time.
Well, yeah, a run to the playoffs, and, you know, knock on wood with your statement you just made, but a run to the playoffs was not something that we really looked forward to when I was growing up. It happened in 80 and 81 and 86. And then again in 97, and we don't talk about the 90s too much. And then again in 2004 and 2005, and then we waited for 10 years. So, you know, it's not – the Astros don't exactly – let me put it this way. While the series the Astros have played in have generally been entertaining, they've mostly been entertaining for fans of the other team that we were playing.
Right.
And that's been the Astros' legacy in the playoffs for the longest time. 2017 changed that. And really, you can go back to 2005, where you won two series for the first time in your history. That was big, but having to wait 10 more years to see it again was tough. 2017, I think, changed Houston, the Astros as a franchise, but also changed Houston from a – we'll pay attention to the Astros if they're in it in September to a baseball town. I think, you know, you look at the crowds, they almost drew 3 million fans this year. Every game was loud. Even, you know, the midweek snoozers against the Royals and teams like that, you had healthy crowds come out and they were excited to be there and excited to watch the Astros and not just get a bobblehead and leave, which had been kind of the mark between 2012 and like 2014, 2015. They still like their bobbleheads. Don't get me wrong. I know some people that have large collections of bobbleheads, but the Houston's turned into a baseball town over the last few years, and the Astros deserve to play in a baseball town.
As I'm sure you know, maybe you haven't seen it, but you can imagine the immediate reactions of Astros Twitter when the final out was recorded. I'm happy to say that I did a good job of avoiding that for a while, but, you know, fire Hinch, blow the whole thing up. Jeff Luhnow has to go. Season's a waste. In what ways do you think, one, the season isn't a waste? And two, how do you think that we will look at this season kind of going forward 5, 6, 7 years ago and you know, where it sort of falls as far as in Astros history?
Well, the season absolutely isn't a waste. And yeah, I've heard some second guessing of AJ Hinch and his handling of the pulling Greinke out and not putting Cole in. And it's all, it ultimately doesn't matter if you don't score more than two runs. And it's not like he kept his best hitters on the bench. So, you know, anything happens in a game seven. But the season's not a waste from the standpoint of you're going to have a Cy Young. It's going to be one of two guys. Both of them, at least up until Wednesday night, were employees of the Astros. you're going to have a Rookie of the Year. You may have an MVP. You won 107 games. You won the vast majority of your series. You scored runs at a differential rate of almost 300 this year. This was a dominant team everywhere but the American League playoffs. And even not firing on all cylinders, we were good enough to be a very good Rays team and a very good Yankees team. It unfortunately didn't work out for us in the World Series, but we still took that to a World 7, despite the fact that we could not hit for nearly 3 weeks with runners in scoring position. And I know, you know, we're looking overall, the focus is obviously on the playoffs right now, because it's still a little bit raw wound. I still can't watch the celebration because I don't want to watch a celebration on the Astros field if it's not the Astros. But you look at the season as a whole, if you had told anybody in February that this team's going to be in a game seven of the World Series at home, everybody would have taken that and considered that a great success. And just because we didn't win that game doesn't mean the season was any less of a success. Yeah, we didn't get the ultimate prize. Yes, everybody's disappointed. Yes, the players wanted more. Yes, the fans wanted more. But we could be Kansas City. We could be Baltimore. We could be Seattle. We could be Arlington. teams that knew they had no shot and were done in July. By every measure except for winning the World Series, this was a very, 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 very good year.
You mentioned you said the sentence that, you know, I'm still employed by the Astros, something to that effect. And of course, that comes to mind, Garrett Cole's awkward immediate.
Was that what I was referencing?
I think it was. And, you know, the awkward immediate reaction to being asked to do some press. You know, how does that sit with you? And I think it's sort of unfair for people to. It sort of seemed like he is excited and everybody's trying to put words in his mouth. Like, some are saying he's mad that AJ didn't play him. Some are saying he's mad that AJ asked him to be ready in the first place with impending free agency, wearing the hat, wearing the Scott Boras hat. Where do you sit with all of that?
I think it's a really bad idea to take too much from asking somebody who just lost a World Series Game 7 anything to do with their future. And I think putting the player in that position isn't going to do anything but get clicks, which is ultimately the goal of journalism in 2019. I don't blame Garrett Cole for being terse Wednesday night. I probably would have been terse too. And, you know, if you beyond the wishful thinking that somehow the Astros are going to pull out a magic contract or Cole's going to be so in love with the city of Houston that he's just going to sign for $15 an hour. He can't get that in Seattle. He's made no secret for this entire year that he is very much looking forward to what he has earned as a baseball player, and that's the right to play where he wants to and for the amount of money he can get.
Let me interrupt for a second. If you actually follow this guy's whole career, he's sort of a union type of guy and has always said, my predecessors came before me and it's my responsibility to, you know, he's kind of a labor guy. And so, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. I'm sorry, continue.
No, and he doesn't throw it in anybody's face. He wasn't wearing a pennant on it, but he's made no secret about he wants to experience free agency. And whatever that comes to, ultimately, everybody in the United States outside of professional athletes has the right, on the military, has the right to work where they want to at the job they want to do. Maybe they have to work their way up, but when it comes to being a baseball player, you're tied to a team for whatever your minor league career is, plus six more years. So Cole has put in, I think, 8 years as a professional, if I counted that right. And now at 29 years old, he gets to go do what any American would want to do and go work where he wants to work. And if that is in New York, which I doubt, if that is in Southern California, which I'm guessing, or if that's in Houston, Texas, more power to him. I think the tweet that he sent out on Thursday, after being able to cool down a little bit and probably having his agent and massage the language a little bit, it was more to the truth of the matter. He enjoyed his time here. You could tell by watching him that he enjoyed his time here. But the two things aren't mutually exclusive. You can enjoy your time in Houston and still want to play in Southern California and be at home, the home you've known for the first 18 years of your life. And who knows what's going to happen in free agency. Maybe the Cubs make him a deal he can't refuse. Maybe Houston trades Greinke and finds $30 million a year to pay him. I still don't think it'd be enough, but that's not a reflection on Houston as much as a reflection of the market bears with the market bears, and he should absolutely be able to go where he wants to go and get it.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a lot about what we think the Astros are going to do. I, for one, think that they will not make that offer, and I think part of them is going to be because – they're going to look at Garrett Cole when he came here and what Garrett Cole's leaving as and think that there are a lot of other pitchers with some of that same skill set that they can do sort of the same thing too. And I've seen names floated already, like Zach Wheeler, who was a trade target of ours. So I think that might be why they're not going to necessarily break from the mold of what they said, the way to create a window of opportunity. I'm sorry. As Luno said, the way to create a hallway of opportunity as opposed to a window is by not doing stuff like that.
All reality being what it is, I don't think we're going to re-sign Gerrit Cole. I do think we make him an offer. I don't think it's going to be the best offer he's going to get. He's going to go elsewhere. I don't think that the Astros need to sign a free agent starter unless they just really, really want to, because you do have Verlander coming back. And despite the fact that he had a rough World Series, he is still the person who is likely at least 50%, maybe 49% odds on favorite to win the Cy Young for this year. He didn't suddenly forget how to pitch or suddenly forget how to throw a fastball. You've got Zach Greinke, who, despite the fact he doesn't throw 97 miles an hour, is still going to win 18 games next year if he's healthy. And he has no reason to think he's not going to be healthy. You've got Lance McCullers Jr. coming back. You've got Jose Urquidy, who can build on this season. And then you really have to find a fifth starter. And that could be a number of people within our system, including Josh James.
Forrest.
Including there's a bunch of options.
Forrest.
Within the system.
It's me trying to will.
I hear somebody saying Scott Boris, but
no. I was saying Forrest. Run, Forrest.
That one too. Yeah. Forrest Whitley is also, I think, somebody who's going to be in play. And I think the bigger issue for the Astros is going to be rebuilding the bullpen, because while they are kind of low-hanging fruit, you are losing Colin McHugh, you are losing Hector Rondon, you are losing Brad Peacock potentially, and a couple of others who just aren't popping to mind right now. So you do have to build kind of the middle of that bullpen. Devo, I think, is the other one that's a free agent. Maybe not. Just Smith, that was the other one. So you've got to find some pieces there. And maybe that's where our pitching depth that we traded away to get Greinke is going to hurt, is going to show up the most next year. But the Astros are in a good place, and they don't have to go sign a $30 million a year guy unless Jim Crane just wants to pay luxury tax. And again, I still don't think he's going to be able to be Southern California.
No, and again, I don't want to commit so much money that it means not re-signing Springer and even we can talk about Correa later, but the idea is to keep that flow coming.
That's the other piece of that is how much more do you value George Springer than you value a starting pitcher who plays once every 5 days? I think anybody that you ask, George Springer is kind of the heart and soul of the team. Without him, are you willing to be the Braves of the 90s in a different way and say, David Justice, thanks, but we don't need you anymore? And package him to see what you can get for him this year. Do you let him play out his contract with Houston and then see what you get out of that compensatory pick? There's a lot of little pieces in play, and I don't want to focus on the future on this call right now, but Springer and Correa are big pieces that you've got to decide what you're going to do with, and signing a Gerrit Cole to a potentially 10-year contract inhibits you from doing a lot of things for a Springer, for a Correa, for a Yordan Alvarez, because that contract would absolutely bridge the life of that guy, for letting Altuve finish his career in Houston, for Bregman when he's up again in 4 years. You don't want to become the Angels and have all of your money tied up in three players. And that's, I think Luno's smarter than that. And I think he also has a desire to be in the race for the long haul rather than be the Marlins in the early 2000s. And we're going to win a World Series, and then we're going to completely tank for 3 years. Then we're going to win another World Series. Then we're completely tank for now 13 years. I don't think that's his blueprint. And as long as he's in the front office, I think we're going to make smarter moves than that, even if they're not the most popular moves.
So, as we wrap up the season then and we put a bow on it, and I think both of you and I agree that it's been it hasn't even been a good season. It's been a great season. And, where were a couple of the highlights for you, a couple of the regular season or even postseason moments that you're going to think back and say that was 2019 for me?
I think the dominance of Gerrit Cole, especially from May on, is something that I'll remember. I think Verlander's no-hitter is something that I'll remember. Jordan Alvarez hitting the ball into the upper deck of the Astrodome while you and I were there. Not the Astrodome, sorry. Minute Maid Park. It would have been in the upper deck of the Astrodome too, though.
Yeah, it would have been.
I mean, literally where the air conditioned vents are, that's how high up this ball was. And then, of course, Altuve's walk-off in the ALCS. There are a lot of others, but those are kind of the big ones for me this year.
Well, Andy, like, I mean, and that puts a bow, I think, on 2019, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks to start talking about 2020. We actually have some fun news that we can announce that we recorded this episode all out of order, so I've already recorded the end. But some cool news for our show, our little show. We just got permission, or I guess we got granted press credentials to actually cover the winter meetings. How cool is that?
Very cool.
I will be on my way.
It'll be very exciting for you. You do know you can't just wear shorts and flip flops and a hoodie to the winter meeting.
I have been reading up on the dress code. Yeah, we are commissioning a couple.
I appreciate it, but I think you might scare the hell out of somebody if you come in carrying a plate of nachos in your flip flops and fanboy in the whole thing. So good luck.
We are definitely getting ready, but very cool that our show is going to get that kind of exposure. So, you know, Andy, a couple more episodes left, but we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Hey, I got something for you to deliver to the Rangers table whenever you get around it.
And
I don't
want
to say what it is on the air because it'll be premeditated, so I don't want to say it out loud.
I got you. We'll talk soon.
All right. Have a good one.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
So as we wrap up this episode of Let's Get To and our focus on the World Series, one of the things that can't be escaped is the fact that it was one of the lowest rated World Series in baseball history. I think the thing I read was that the Game 7 was the third lowest rated Game 7. Scott McIntyre is joining us right now to talk about why. Scott, how's it going?
Hey, great. Great, Jim. How are you doing?
Doing okay. And the thing is, all things considered, you know, it's funny. I think there are things in my life that anticipation of stuff always stresses me out more than result of stuff. And once the final out was made, I was kind of like, all right, well, let's get ready for next year. And already into the place of saying, congrats to the Nats. They simply out-baseballed the Astros, and the Astros had a great season, and nothing of that gets taken away by not getting the final eight outs.
Yeah, and I've seen that Caesar Sportsbook's already made you the favorite for 2020, so, you know, that's not bad.
it's not a bad way to go out. Let's talk about this World Series, because I know that there are two things at play here. There is pace of play, which is overwhelmingly something baseball's been discussing, but – for some reason, we got low ratings in this one. So I kind of wanted your take on what kind of what you thought was why, and I would kind of give you what I thought was why, and we could see kind of where we end up.
Yeah, so I have one question to throw back to you just really quick. I mean, I definitely want to answer this question. Do you know if ratings, is it still based off of standard television method, or are they basing this off of internet viewership as well?
So from what I understand, they are able to now track streams. So like, for example, okay. I stream the game myself. So from what I understand, they are able to track that part of it as well.
Okay.
Sorry to cut you off. Before we go down that road, we also have to understand that ratings are always going to continue to go down because viewers just have more options. So it's almost – so we have to accept the fact that viewership is always going to get a bit more spread out.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that. That's a really good point. I think also – as we've touched on, baseball has an age factor and an interest factor, and it's the pace of the play and the average age of the fan that is leading to this. I think that the viewership is a combination of, regardless of who you had in the World Series, viewership was going to be down for those reasons, because baseball has a problem, an interest problem at the major league level. They're 4-hour long games, which is ridiculous. And, you know, it's not – the Washington Nationals don't exactly – you know, people saw Houston there a couple of years ago. They're like, oh, yeah, I've heard all year how good they are. Okay. And it's not that huge New York or L.A. market. There is something to be said when New York or LA are in a series, and they just weren't this year. And I don't think the Nationals really generated that much interest, even though, as you guys know, from March on, I thought they were the real deal.
So I want to go to the New York LA thing, because I think that is ultimately what causes people to tune in. And then we're going to talk about timing of game, which I know we disagree with, which is going to be fun for everyone. But yep. I think that you're right. But I also think that the problem is on Fox and ESPN. Fox and ESPN, I think, make short-sighted decisions on who to cover. And in baseball, I think you see this problem more than any other sport. They run to Red Sox, Yankees, and Dodgers, yeah, because they get the most ratings, but also because it's low-hanging fruit. And then they are, by sort of ignoring the 27 other teams, they are creating more Yankees and Red Sox and Dodgers fans. And the case can be in point of a conversation you and I had in a hotel room overlooking Busch Stadium not 4 or 5 months ago, or maybe leaving less than that.
Yeah.
You wondered how my wife ended up being a Cubs fan, and I knew you knew the answer because WGN promoted the Cubs, and that's what people could watch. If people are only allowed to watch the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox, that's all people are going to become fans of in towns that don't have other major league teams. So you've created – they've created this problem themselves.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely correct. It was back in the day. You had two superstations. It was WGN and WTBS. And so you tuned into the Cubs during the day and the Braves at night. Those were the selling points, and it's what made each one of those teams interesting enough, in my opinion, and what led to those Braves teams of the 90s. The general the general stations, if you will, the general networks, to your point, the Foxes and the ESPNs out there, they do focus on who has the big the big salary and the big drive, and that's Boston, that's the Yankees, that's the Dodgers. And when they're not involved, they don't know the story to tell. And even though I'm a Cardinals fan, I think somewhat the Cardinals have a national feel to them. We get the third largest attendance. It's baseball forever, you know. So I think that's somewhat of a drive too. I really think the problem that baseball has in general was shown during the World Series in the interest level and in the time of games and, strikeouts and home runs. They're really cool, but they're like they take no time at all, and then you're on to the next thing.
Well, let's get to that then, because I think that's a brand of baseball question, because I want to leave the time thing for last. So sure. I do agree with you, and I do agree with you that we are playing a brand of baseball that gets old for people real quick.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. If it is perfect for the fan that wants to look down at their phone during the game, and then they hear the crowd roar and they look up and they go, "Oh, strikeout," and they start clapping, or they hear a crack and they look up, "Oh, ball's flying." I think that's also why you've asked me multiple times, you know, what's up with all the people that get up and cheer and go crazy for fly balls that don't even reach the warning track. I have no scientific proof of this whatsoever, but I do believe something has to be said for the people that are looking down. They're looking at their phones. They hear the crack of the bat. They look up. They see a ball in the air, and they go, "Oh, must be a home run." No, it's a lazy fly ball can of corn to center field. It's not that big of a deal. I think people aren't paying attention, and then whenever they see these things happen, they're like, "Yeah, that was fun. Whatever. It's just a ball flying out of the stadium. It's boring. Baseball's so boring." There have been studies, and I can't reference them right now, but it's really easy to go find them using the Googles, and I'll be glad to Google that for somebody and put it on a web page if they need me to. There have been studies that show that when the interest level of baseball goes up, and when the average age of a fan goes down, which are the two things you want, the one thing that is invariably also going up in baseball are stolen bases. Because stolen bases can happen at any moment. It's about somebody getting on the base. It's about somebody moving, somebody running. Things are happening. Things are going. It's contact, keeps the ball in play, and it's runners moving. That's what's interesting. That's what's interesting about basketball, right? Guys are running up and down the court all the time. That's what's interesting about hockey, because people are going up and down the ice all the time. even in football, you know, I guess they're hitting each other, and there's the opportunity that somebody may make the long run at a moment. But the NFL, you know, it's like a 5-yard gain on a little out route, and that's exciting. But I think you've got to have things happening in front of people. And the way to do that is contact with the baseball and running the base paths.
And you're describing the baseball that we both grew up watching. I mean, the fact of the matter is the bloop and a blast is a relatively new development. And I remember when the Astros were in the National League, we used to just laugh at how the American League teams played because we were doing things like hitting and running and moving runners over and manufacturing runs. It's Augie Garrido baseball, right? It's what the game used to do.
Yeah, I hate sacrifice bunts. I just do because I understand their purpose and that's great. That's not going to generate interest, but hit and run to me is the most exciting play in baseball because anything could happen at that point in time. The batter could swing and the guy still gets a stolen base. The batter could swing and the runner gets thrown out. The batter could miss the sign and the guy's hung up in between. He could actually make contact with the ball and drive the guy and put runners on the corners. So many things can happen with a hit and run. But what has to happen is a guy has to attempt a stolen base and a guy has to make contact. Those two things happen, and that's what leads the excitement to a game. And when I've been at St. Louis this year and they put the hit and run on, which Mike Schilt does with aggressive base running, people get excited. They get excited quick, and you can tell it's okay. It keeps you around also for the next pitch. It makes you want to see the next pitch. That's, to me, in my estimation, with my esteemed 14 PhDs that I have in baseball science. to me, that's what Major League, that's what baseball in general needs to focus on to increase the viewership of the game and make it more interesting. But I know their mindset right now is that chicks dig the long ball.
Well, and so that brings us to, I think, the other thing too. And I think that is timing of the game. And I know that we have differing opinions on it, but I do think the reality is having watched World Series games 3 and 4 on the East Coast and having games get done after midnight, I don't see how we can get younger fans if they are going to have to go to sleep in the final 3 innings of, some of the most exciting games of the year. Also, we can start the games late enough that they get to see all the pomp and circumstance at the beginning. But so for me, I think my proposal would be to start to taking the teams involved in consideration. Okay, so you had the Nationals and the Astros, the Central and East Coast. I would have backed those start times up an hour earlier, so that way the games are ending at 11 and not ending at midnight or after midnight.
I this is where we disagree, because I think that people are accustomed on the East Coast to having their local news at 11 p.m. and not 10 p.m. Whereas if you're in the Central time zone, you're used to 10 p.m. Everything on the East Coast is always being shown an hour later. And I think they grow accustomed to that. I think the 4-hour game time is the ridiculous part. I think the number of commercials and the time in between innings is the ridiculous part. There is an easy way for Fox and ESPN or TBS or whoever's going to broadcast the game to increase the number of commercials that they have while at the same time keeping people tuned into the game. And that's in between hitters or during pitching changes. Continue to show the baseball game on the screen and show the commercials on the other side of the screen. It's very commonplace. They do it all the time. Golf does this all the time on every broadcast. The majority of commercials now on Golf Channel, for example, will be in a split screen, a box and box. You're still going to get the advertising there. You let the advertising be heard by people, and marketing execs are smart enough and they'll know how to play on this. They can figure it out if they haven't already. And if they haven't figured it out, then they need to go, take up a different career. You do the split screen, you keep people engaged to the game. And to be quite honest, I think that baseball in its pace could learn a lot from how golf broadcasts have adapted to this over the year, because they both have the same type of pace, that deliberate sort of something's about to happen, but it's not there yet. So that's my 2 cents. That'll also let them, I don't care if they're showing a commercial, every other batter okay, fine. Yeah, I still got the game here on the right-hand side of my screen. So to me, it works, and that's the way around it. I don't think it's a start time problem. I think it's a length of the game problem.
No, I agree with that. I guess I'm always under the assumption that advertisers are never going to give up their own. So, like, I can see them doing both things. And it does – and the ratings definitely start to drop off the later that a game goes. Because it does seem like our kids, the bottom line is right now is like the people that we want to care about the game to keep it going in 10 years when you and I are old and can't do it anymore are falling asleep before some of the most important things really happen.
And you and I do agree on one thing. There's nothing wrong with having day games on the weekends.
Well, that's my other thing, though. So, okay, I'll take your premise for Tuesday, Wednesdays, and the Tuesday, Wednesdays, and the Friday even. But why not? Like, I know that the logic used to be, well, we don't want to compete with football. Well, now you are competing with football. Football now goes from 9 in the morning until 2 in the morning on Saturday, and then, 9 in the morning until midnight on Sunday. So just embrace it and have a day game. Why not?
Yeah, I agree with that. And because what are people going to do? They're going to record one or the other. That's the other thing, right? Somewhere it's going to be stuck aside, and they can go view it on demand later. That's what people do. And it's, you know, there may be two football games on at the exact same time I want to watch. I'm going to record one, and I'm going to watch the other, or I'm going to have one device with one game on and the other one with, you know, that's the other thing. People can just pop open their iPad and watch one game, and then have the other game on their TV, and they can even have a rugby match on their phone. So there's so many options that with technology going the way it's going, I think there's way too many opportunities for smart people to get out in front of what's happening with technology and how people have very short attention spans now and capitalize on that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also too, they got to find a way to embrace the regionality of the sport. And I think you're right. I think that they spend so much time looking at projections and saying, okay, we think it's going to be Dodgers Yankees, which is, you know, a lot of projections said. So they really did have to rush to introduce you run into bad television, right? Because you got to rush to introduce the Nationals to everybody. And now we've gotten memes saying, hey, do you know that Juan Soto is 21? Because we have, of course, we know that because you've been telling us that. And, you know, to me, it reminded me of every time I would watch whenever the Longhorns were on like prime time, like game of the week stuff, I would learn that Colt McCoy and Jordan Shipley were college roommates because every broadcast told you. And it's like, you know, I think one of the things that I would do to maybe make it more interesting, embrace the regionality of the sport. Baseball is a regional game. It just is. And we get to know our players. So rather than bringing in Joe Buck and John Smoltz, who I don't think Joe Buck does a bad job. I think when we watch baseball, we expect more personal stories. So why not go get Jeff Blum or Todd Callis from the Astros and then go get one of the two guys from the Nationals and have them be the team. And have them call the game, and now you've got color commentary coming from people who actually know these players and these teams.
Well, or you can, if you're Fox and you have this string of networks, or ESPN for that matter, what does ESPN do during the college football championship game? They've got four channels, you know, ABC showing the real game, and ESPN has
the real game.
And well, you know what I mean with the typical broadcasters, but you have all of these different. Views. So how interesting would it be that if Fox was showing the game with Joe Buck and John Smoltz, and by the way, when you said you didn't have a problem with Joe Buck, at least 50 of your viewers just choked a little bit on whatever he's not his dad.
But I also don't listen to Joe Buck. I sync up the radio call, so that might help.
I will say this also before I move, just diverting very quickly. I like John Smoltz as a color commentator. I think he brings a really interesting point to the game. I'll say that. Joe Buck bores me, but I'm good with John Smoltz. But if you have that on Fox, why not on FS1 have I don't know, Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell sitting on one side of the table while Moises Alou and somebody else that used to be Expos or the ghost of Walter Johnson sitting on the other side of the table. You know, you could do something like that. And then you have this other interest. So if people don't want to watch Joe Buck and John Smoltz, they can still watch the game with this interesting commentary from other people. Yeah, there's just too many ways to get creative with this.
And I think it comes across too that since Joe Buck doesn't call baseball all year, you know, like why not? You know, if you're going to do that, I think ESPN and when they have their Fox Baseball national broadcast, they have great crews for the regular season. Why not? Again, yeah. Viewers are familiar with them. I sort of like my idea of maybe even a neutral play-by-play guy and then the color guy from one of each team. And then they can really share these anecdotes of, because one of the things I love baseball so much that I would love to hear more stories about other than how Rendon went to Texas and Soto's 21. Or went to Rice, I mean, and Soto's 21. I had just boiled down everything. Oh, yeah. And Scherzer got hit with the ball earlier. And Strasburg.
And were you aware? They shut Strasburg down.
I did not. I was aware of that.
Did you know that?
I learned that. Yeah.
I learned it 19 times during the postseason. Sorry. But no, I think that's an excellent idea, too. They could just get creative. You know, try to be creative and stop using the same principles of yesterday to apply to today's problems.
When there were three networks and the other two networks would not have anything on because they knew they were going to lose to the World Series. I mean, that is how it was, and it's not that way anymore.
That's correct. You're absolutely correct. I don't know what more to say about it other than everything we've just brought up should be on the table, in my opinion, for them.
Well, as we wrap up, I do want to ask this question, and so I was looking through some stats, and honestly, I really didn't do much for sort of obsessing about the final out or the end of the game. I kind of just let it go and congratulate the Nationals. But the Astros for game seven had an expected batting average of balls in play of something like 290. And the Nationals had something of an expected batting average of balls in play of 230. So why do we like this stupid, stupid game?
Exactly for that reason, because obscure things happen. It's not just if I have one takeaway from this year's World Series, first of all, it's the weirdest World Series I've ever seen. It, in my opinion, it's the weirdest thing that's ever happened. As Smoltz said during the last part of the broadcast, you're witnessing something you'll never witness again. And that's every road team winning in a seven game series. It hadn't happened in 115 years. And suddenly it does. I think timely hitting, it goes back to contact. It goes back to timely hitting. Really, really played more of an influence than anything on the outcome of the series. You know, the Astros with runners on base, they just didn't get it done. And the Nationals weren't that great through the first five or six innings in most cases. And then, you know, the last three innings, I saw stats on Rendon and with runners in scoring position or whatever it was with seventh inning on at one point in time in seven plate appearances, he had a walk, three doubles and three home runs. That's just clutch, man. And that's what winds up mattering in a game like this. It is so obscure. If they played five more series, the Nats might win one of those. But, you know, it's just the way things worked out this time.
So. Yeah. And I'm trying to, you know, obviously I was sort of half kidding. It is the case of it's why you play it. And it's why, you know, the interesting thing about baseball is it's a playoff system that is completely different than its regular season system. And I think it's why it's beautiful. And I think you can both be really proud of what the Astros did and sad, and also just tip your cap to the Nationals because they really, you know, they had that close series with the Dodgers and then, as you know, got the brooms out and then, and then, you know, threw some punches and then took some punches because that was a lifeless Nationals team for those three middle games. That was, I don't know. And then they fought back and you got to love baseball for that very reason.
Yeah. So the two sports that have, you know, that we play here in St. Louis. So in hockey in the NHL, the Blues were the worst team at the beginning of January in the NHL, and they wound up winning the cup in June. For baseball, the Nats were, you know, so far under 500. They were horrible in May, and they turned it around. And so it's not about who's the best team over the course of the full season. It's about who's good enough over the course of the full season, and then gets hot in the postseason. And that's the way American sports are. You know, that's not the way it's played around the world. The regular season matters in the premiership more than anything. But in the States, it's what have you done for me lately?
And that's probably a good way to wrap it up. Scott, we'll have you back on in a couple of weeks. We've only got 3 episodes left of this season. And everybody else out there, until next time, let's get to it.